Okay, good morning, everyone. Good evening. Good kvitzel. Thank the Lubin Foundation for sponsorship of the Daf. Daf of Luna Zeichel Neshmas Losu Ben Zaltzman. Welcome to the second installment today of the Daf Yomi. Usually we do one Daf a day, but today we have the distinct pleasure of doing two a day. I hope everyone understands that in lieu of the fact that we're doing today, we're going to be skipping tomorrow. Not skipping, but passing over, if you will. The davening tomorrow and having the Daf Yomi is always a challenge, so we're just going to circumvent through that challenge and have the daf tonight. We are on daf Yud Amud Aleph, and we are towards the bottom of Yud Amud Aleph. And let's go. We have.
What is the next daf?
What time? Wait, let's get through this one first. Before whatever. It'll be in the schedule. Okay, on Daf Yud Amud Aleph, the Gemara says. Before we just jump right into the Gemara. So again, just a bit of a preview. It was on Daf Tes where the Gemara finally concluded its discussion of Esidocha Lo Sase, the positive commandment overriding a negative prohibition, and also the larger discussion of Esidocha Lo Sase Sheish Bakaris, which of course is directly related to Yibum. And then the Gemara now has moved its attention away from that and back to the Mishnah, and back to the analysis of the Mishnah. The Gemara over here presents a dialogue, a conversation that takes place between Rebbe and Levi. Rebbe, of course, the one responsible for the editing of the Mishnayos, and Levi, a colleague of his, a Talmud of his. Okay, not exactly sure which one's a more correct adjective, but a conversation takes place between the two. Just by the means of communication, it sounds a little bit more like they're colleagues, they're chaverim, not Rebbe Talmud. Okay, but either way, okay, but what the conversation was is that the Mishnah obviously made a point to cap it at 15. Chamesh Esrei Nashim Potrot Saraseim. 15 women are going to exempt their co-wives. And again, we've said this already a number of times already. The Mishnah is describing a scenario in which a candidate for Yibam presents herself to her brother-in-law, and she is an erva to the brother-in-law. Now, as we point out from day one, she's always going to be an erva to the brother-in-law because she is the brother's wife. But nevertheless, she presents herself to be another one of the Arayos. So if she's any one of the 15 mentioned in the Mishnah, so she will be exempt from the mitzvah of Yibum. That additional erva is going to prohibit her from Yibum. And not just her, but the co-wife as well. That's what we learned all the way back in the Mishnah. And the Mishnah actually delineated all 15 Arayos. As we started the dialogue between Rebbe and Levi, so Levi had a tine on Rebbe, he had an issue, and that is that the Mishnah should have added a 16th case. What would have been the 16th case, as Levi saw? Anusas, Imo Anusas Aviv. So that would be a case where your mother comes to you for the mitzvah of Yibum. How did that happen? So she was Anusas Aviv. She was not married to your father, she was just, she was violated by your father. And as a result of that, so she may not be, I'm going to be careful about the words I choose, she may not be prohibited to your brother, assuming, of course, that it's not your brother's mother, because then there's not a conversation to be had. But if she is just merely Anusas Aviv and not Ashes Aviv, so she may not be prohibited to your brother, and that would be a scenario in which she could marry the brother would die, and then she would present herself to Yibum, and as being an erva, she would obviously be prohibited. And that's the 16th case that should be included in the Mishnah. As we pointed out yesterday, or I should say rather this morning, sorry, now I'm losing sight. As we pointed out this morning, this is not a Dever Pasher, this is not something which is clear. It's debatable whether or not Anusas Aviv is prohibited or not prohibited. It's Machlokas Tanayim. And so the Gemara points out that this all would only work out if you subscribe to the opinion that Anusas Aviv is in fact going to be mutter. But that's not clear. Rabbi Yehuda says that's usher. And basically Rebbe's counter-argument to Levi is that, and this is one of a number of points that the Gemara made, but I'm just quickly summarizing. Rebbe's point to Levi is that if you look at the totality of the Mishnayos in the first parak of Yevamos, you will see that the Mishnayos subscribe to the viewpoint of Rav Yehuda. And since the Mishnayos subscribe to the viewpoint of Rav Yehuda, and Rav Yehuda says that a man may not marry Anusas Aviv, so then There's no discussion to be had. That's why it's not recorded as the 16th case in the first Mishnah of Yevamos. Okay, hopefully all that we had some level of clarity to it. We're going to continue in the Gemara exactly where we left off. So Rav Yehuda Dama Dasa Banusas Avim Mishum Hachi Lo Tani Lei. Two-thirds down on the Gemara in Yudam and Aleph, Amalei Ravina Rav Ashi. So Ravina says to Rav Ashi, Li Rav Yehuda Nami Mishkachala. Gemara says, look, let's still maintain that our Mishnah is going like Rav Yehuda. And according to Rav Yehuda, you can have this case of Anusas Aviv. How are you going to have it according to Rav Yehuda? So it's very simple. It's simple, but obviously it's going to be controversial, and that is D'i Aviv Anusiv. Meaning, Rav Yehuda says that a man may not marry a woman violated by his father. Right, Anusas Aviv. It's not an Erva. It's not any of the arayas mentioned in Achrimos and Kedoshim. It is a lav. It's a negative prohibition. Okay, what's the basic rule? We know the rule is that a woman to you is an erva. There's no tfisas kedushin. The marriage simply does not work. If she is prohibited to you only through a lav, a negative prohibition, so according to most opinions, which is what we accept, there is tfisas kedushin. The kedushin is going to work. So what? Correct. So, can we entertain, can we argue that our Mishnah could have included Ima Anusas Aviv? And how can we have such a case? Very simple. Where Shimon married her, even though it was a violation of the Torah. But the marriage would work. It's an effective marriage. And then, under such a circumstance, under such a situation, so then you will have, if Shimon were to die and present it to Reuben, I know Reuben's always the one that dies. If Reuben married her and Reuben dies, so she presents herself to Shimon, the mother of Shimon, and she's an Erva, and that's how we can get to that scenario. So the Gemara answers very simply, Dilo Kitani. So the Gemara says, okay, you're right, the case could be constructed that way, but our Mishnah wants to create a scenario where all these cases, all these unions came about without any Torah law being violated. Not in Issacharis, Issacharis is no marriage, but not a lav. Meaning we want to construct all the cases in the Mishnah without having to transgress any lavim in the Torah. That's why you're right, the point is taken, you could construct a case, but you have to violate a lav in the Torah, lo yigal kanaf aviv, and we would like to create the Mishnah without any violation. So the Gemara says, I'll tell you what, you can do is you could still construct a case, and there wouldn't be a violation. So the Gemara, which is funny because look at the next words of the Gemara. Yaakov anas kalaso. So Yaakov violated his daughter-in-law. You know, it's funny. The Gemara just opens up by saying, oh, here's a scenario where there won't be a violation. And then the Gemara just goes right into a scenario where, well, Yaakov was ma'anes. He violated his daughter-in-law. Now, that obviously is a violation. Man's not allowed to have relations with his daughter-in-law. She's an erva to him. Okay.
There are two cases that are also cases of anus, right?
They're cases of anus.
Yeah.
Right. So, but it's not a... right. It's... Correct. Oh, I was hoping nobody was going to notice that. Okay, I'll tell you what. Come to me after the daf today, and we'll talk more about it. Okay. Okay. Yes. All right. So the Gemara says, so let's take a look at the following scenario. So Yaakov anas kalaso. So Yaakov now the case starts off by Yaakov violating his daughter-in-law, and v'holi mimenu ben, and a child is born out of that union. Umeis Reuven b'labanim, and Reuven dies. Now remember, Yaakov is the father of Reuven, and Yaakov now just had another child, oddly enough, with his daughter-in-law. Okay, understood. Again, the dysfunction is not.
This is before Reuven died.
Yeah, correct. And no, we're keeping it simple. Both brothers were on this earth together. Umeis Reuven b'labanim, and Reuven died without any children. V'naflo la kamei bara, and now. So who has the mitzvah of Yibum? The brother Reuven. The brother Reuven also happens to be her son.
Right.
Correct. So okay. So now that would be a scenario in which you would have a mother being a candidate for Yibum for the surviving brother. And so now I understand the way we got to this scenario was not just bizarre, but prohibited. But again, the Gemara now wants to just simply present a scenario in which you can at least have a case where the mother will be a candidate for Yibum for her son, and neither of the brothers, neither Reuben or Shimon, violated any Eastern the Torah in order to arrive at this scenario.
There's an issue, and that is if the wife was already violated by the father-in-law, right?
Yeah.
How could she go back to her husband? Like, there's like, isn't there like an issue with that?
For Onis, unless there's a Kohen, you can go back to her husband. Again, just let's stay with the case as it is on hand. Now she falls in front of her. She falls in front of her son for Yibum. And so this would be a scenario where you would have a mother being the candidate for Yibum. She, of course, is prohibited because she's an Erva. If there is a co-wife, the co-wife will also be prohibited because she'd star as Erva. Okay. So that would be a case, could it not? So Amalei ba'achosa de'etera kamayra ba'achosa de'isur lo kamayra. And the Gemara's answer is very simple. Okay, you're right. The brothers themselves didn't violate any isur. Oh, fine. But to get to this case, so you had a father-in-law violating his daughter-in-law. That's an isur. That's an erva in order to arrive at the scenario. So the Gemara says it's just not going to work. Meaning we're looking for the 15 cases in our Mishnah are looking for scenarios where there is no Issur Torah being violated, not an Erva, not one of the Arayos, nor a Lav as well. Okay, that pretty much ends the discussion between Levi and Rebbe. And what comes out now is that Rebbe's steadfast. Rebbe's very clear that there are only 15 cases in the Mishnah and that's it. Whereas according to Levi, there should be a 16th case. Now, Rebbe time and again kept refuting all of these arguments, and yet Levi held his ground. The Alpha P came around the bottom of Yud Amud Aleph. And even though this is so, but Kalamba Masis and Dini Levi. Levi examined and he found a Braisa. Now when I say he found a Braisa, I'm not being perfectly accurate, at least not according to Rashi. So Rashi says, but Kalamba Masnisan, he gia vahosifa li'imon usisavi b'mishnaso. The way Rashi presents it, it sounds like Levi had his Mishnayos. Again, we call them Mishnayos, right? They were a collection of Tanaidic statements. And so Rebbe Yehuda Anasi obviously had one. It's called the Mishnah. Rebbe Chia had one. It's called the Braisa. Rebbe Yoshi had one. It's called the Tosefta. And now, the way Rashi presents it, Levi had one as well. What was it called? I don't know. I'm unclear. But, all right, it's also another compilation and organization of Tanaitic statements. And Levi, the way Rashi describes it, Levi actually edited his own Mishnah so that his Mishnah would not have 15, but rather would have 16. And this is how it would go. Imo pamim poter tzarasa, pamim eino poter tzarasa. Sometimes a mother excuses a co-wife, and sometimes a mother doesn't excuse a co-wife. Keitzad, haisa imo nesuas aviv nesuas la'achiv, me'aviv umeis. In a scenario where the mother was married to the father. So this is a classic case of Ashes Av. This is the wife of the father. And then the mother goes ahead and marries one of your brothers. Already red flag going up. A red flag should be going up in everyone's head. And that is, your brother can't marry your father's wife. Whether she is or isn't his mother, irrespective. Cannot marry Ashes Av if you can't marry the wife of your father. And that's exactly the point. It's not a question. That's just simply a good understanding of what's going on right now. That's exactly it. Because she is the father's wife, therefore she's an erva, therefore the marriage is not a marriage. And then you understand the very next line of the Braisa. Zuiimo, she in poteret sarasa. She's not going to excuse any of the other co-wives from the mitzvah of Yibum for a very simple reason. Because she's not a co-wife. Because she is that wasn't a marriage. Haisa imo anusas aviv v'nisas achiv. But let's say this woman wasn't married to your father. She was violated by the father, but she wasn't married to the father. Umes, and then she married your brother. And again, according to Rabbi Yehuda, Could this be? I understand that. I'm just thinking in my head. Could the Braisa over here possibly entertain the idea that maybe it's Rav Yehuda and it's done be'isser? Okay, but let's keep it simple. Let's keep it like the Chachamim. It's a better way to say it. I agree with you. So umezu imosha pater tzarasa. This would be a case where the mother will exempt the co-wife. The alpha pisha shana Chachamim mishnah shana chamishasrei yeishlanu lahos tishayishasrei. And even though it says in our Mishnah, meaning it's great, meaning in Levi's record, he acknowledges that there's a Mishnah, and he acknowledges that there's 15. But I would like to add one, and that would be, Yishlan lo osir shesh esrei kagon zu, like this example over here. Okay, so, possible 16th case added to the Mishnah. Amale Rabbi le Rabbi Yochanan, le Levi damar di'i nami, Katani. So Reish Lakish says to Rav Yochanan, look, Levi was ready to entertain the possibility of D'i, meaning that on the previous Amud we were prepared to take the position that you can construct cases in the Mishnah even at the expense of violating a law in the Torah. So the Gemara says, if that's true, Lesnei Cholsi Avimta V'Chazav Kadsha Umeis B'lo Banim. So please consider the following scenario. Let's consider that a woman is a candidate for Yibum, and one of the brothers, instead of doing Yibum, he does Chalitza, and then afterwards he has a change of heart, and he says, you know, that decision I made was too rash, it was the wrong decision, I want to rethink it, you know what, I'm going to be Mekadosher, I want to marry her. Now, I don't think we've been introduced to this idea yet, this may be the first time, but let's say it, after Chalitza's done, that's it, right? The opportunity has been closed. There's no longer an opportunity for Yibum. It's either Yibum or it's Chalitza. But once one of those are done, so then the story comes to an ending. Happy ending, sad ending, however you want to describe it. So here he did Chalitza with this woman, and afterwards he marries her. Hachosi Aventa V'chaz V'kacha. Wait. I'm not going to answer that question yet. It's too early in the discussion to answer that. Omeis b'labanim, and she died without any children. Demigo de'ihi asiri asura tsarasanami asire. So, and since she is going to be prohibited, so the co-wives themselves are also going to be prohibited. Okay, so now we have a scenario in which we have a case that's created through a violation of the Torah. And why isn't this also added to the Mishnah? Okay, now, here we go. Let's introduce this topic. It's a fascinating topic. It's going to take up a good part of this evening. And that is the following. You do chalitza to your sister-in-law. Okay, she at that point in time is prohibited to you. What's the name of the prohibition that she's prohibited to you? So, we're going to see this in the Gemara. You can take a look at Rashi right over here. Rashi says it. Rashi writes, I'm going to read the Rashi inside. The v'chazav v'kitcha, v'kiddushin tofsan laba, de'enu alav ela balav. I'm sorry, I should have told you. We're in the fourth line down in Rashi. This woman, to the man who did chalitza to her, is only prohibited to him through a lav. D'chsiv, asher lo yibaneh es beis achiv. Because it says, regarding the brother-in-law, who instead of doing yibum to his sister-in-law, does chalitza, the Torah says in Parshas Kiseitzei, "Asher lo yibanez beis achiv." He did not build the house of his brother. Kevin shelo bana. This is a Gemara's drasha. And once he no longer built, shuv lo yibanez. He's no longer able to build. In other words, there's a law in the Torah, negative prohibition in the Torah, for a man to marry a woman that he did chalitza to. Meaning she was a candidate for yibum chalitza. He did chalitza to her. At that point in time, she's prohibited to him through what is only a lav.
So, does that mean he went from heiress to inappropriate position?
Right. Well, right. It went from, how do I say this? It went from kares to the mitzvah of yibum chalitza, which gives him total license to do one or the other. And then after chalitza, it would downgrade now to this lav. And again, let's go back to the basic rule. When a woman's prohibited to a man, but the prohibition is only a lav, so then, obviously you're violating the Torah by marrying her, but the kedushin is tofes, but the kedushin is effective. So here would be a scenario in which... Good. You're asking the right question. But let's wait this one out, because the Gemara is going to ask. So she's now a lav. The kedushin is going to be toe-faced. So here would be a scenario in which you would now have this woman being married to this man, and if this man dies, she's an erva to all the other brothers. Okay, now that's going to need thinking. That's going to need thought. How on one hand, just give me a moment. Let's finish. Let me just get through a sentence. So this woman to this man is going to be a lav, is going to be a negative prohibition, and on top of that, she's still going to be a kares prohibition to all the other brothers. And if everything I'm saying is correct and true, and we'll see in just a moment, maybe not, but if everything what I'm saying is correct and true, so then this would be another case scenario that we could have included in the Mishnah. Okay. To which the Gemara says, so v'chai v'lam, I'm sorry, demigudi yasar tsara sanam yasar, amar le lefishena b'tsara tsara. So the answer that was given by Rav Yochanan is, well, you know why that case is not included in the Mishnah? Because remember, in order for it to be a case in our Mishnah, you have to get to the position of not just an exemption of the co-wife, but then the co-wife being exempt to the co-wife, right? The secondary co-wives. In this particular scenario, you're never going to get to that point. And the reason why is very simple. Because there will be no other brother who will be able to marry her once she's given chalitza by one of the brothers. And as a result of that, you will never have the co-wife of a co-wife, period. That's why, says Rav Yochanan, in this case, didn't make it into the Mishnah. Which really means, really, it's such a technicality. Meaning, in principle, this case should make it into the Mishnah, but just because we can't realize the scenario of co-wife of co-wife, therefore it didn't make it into the Mishnah. So, v'leim aleichai v'lav v'nid v'chai v'lav v'nei chalitza v'yibam nenu. So the Gemara says to Rav Yochanan, that's so interesting. You know, you could have given Reish Lakish such a more straightforward answer. And that is that this woman is only a law prohibition to all the brothers. Meaning, I said just a moment ago that this woman is a kares prohibition to all the other brothers. Rav Yochanan does not agree. Rav Yochanan says that she is a law prohibition to all the other brothers. Now, if that's true, if she's only a law prohibition to all the other brothers have a mitzvah of Yibum, if in the event this man dies, right, we're talking about the man who did chalitza and ended up marrying her. So if he dies, all the other brothers are going to have the mitzvah of Yibum. So what will you tell me? Oh, but there's a law prohibition. If it's a kares prohibition, that impedes Yibum. But if it's just a law, so then it doesn't impede Yibum. Now we'll learn later on in the Masechta that if there's a law prohibiting the Yavama to her Yavam, so chalitza, not Yibum. But still, there's a chance for chalitza. So the Gemara's answer is Lidvav Kamala Leh Lididichai Velavanaim. So Rav Yochanan knew his audience. Rav Yochanan says, look, I was talking to Reish Lakish. I know he's not going to agree with me on that point. But Ela Lididicha Chai Vikrisa Zinel Fishena Batsarat Sarah. So therefore, he was speaking Reish Lakish's language. I know, Reish Lakish, you don't agree with me. I know you feel and you view that all the other brothers to this woman is a kares. And I therefore know that you're not even going to have we can't even talk about Yibam and Chalitza with any of the other brothers. But here's what I do know, however. I can answer you as well. And I'll just simply tell you that the reason why this case didn't make it into our Mishnah is because our Mishnah has the case of Tzara Tzara, and this case can't produce the case of Tzara Tzara. Okay, yeah, go ahead. Excellent. Hold, that's really the perfect thought. Hold that thought. That's the Gemara is about to articulate. Okay. Idmar. Hachole. It's Levinto v'chazav v'kisha. Okay, so now, it's funny. This is classic Gemara where the Gemara assumed we already knew the machlok between Reish Lakish Rav Yochanan. We didn't. We're about to be exposed to it. Gemara discussed it as if we knew it. And then the Gemara says, oh, by the way, look, now is a great time to introduce machlok between Reish Lakish and Rav Yochanan. So Itmar, Hacholos Levinto v'chazav v'kisha. So let's say a man does chalitza with his yivam. Okay, so again, simple construct scenario. You have Reuven and Shimon. Reuven's married to a woman. Let's even add other wives as well. And you'll see why I'm doing that later on. And he's married to a number of women. Reuven dies, and Shimon now has a mitzvah of Yibum, or Chalitza. So what does Shimon do? He does Chalitza to one of the women. And then after having done Chalitza, he then has a change of heart, and he then says, Chaz v'kitsha. He was Mekadisher. Right? He tried to do Kiddushin to her. I'm Rish Lakish. Rish Lakish's position is, who ain chayav ala Chalitza karis, v'ha'achin chayav ala Chalitza karis. Al hatzara bein hu bein achim chayav al hatzara karis. So Rish Lakish says that the only relationship that changes is going to be the relationship between the two principal parties who were involved in the chalitza, the brother, the surviving brother who did the chalitza, the woman who received the chalitza. Their relationship changes, and that they once upon a time was a karis relationship. And now it's no longer a karis relationship, it's downgraded to a lav. What's a lav? We mentioned it just a moment ago. Lo yibaneh. Okay. But the relationship between any of the other brothers and the woman who received chalitza, and the relationship between all the brothers and the co-wives who did not receive chalitza, they are status quo, ashes ach, and they are all a karis. That is the opinion of Reish Lakish. Rabbi Yochanan Amar, ben hu, ben achim, and Rav Yochanan says no. After Chalitza is done, the entire relationship between every one of the surviving brothers and every one of the widows is going to be downgraded to a lav. And there will not be any more Karis to speak about once Chalitza is done. Okay, and let's see if we can now understand this a little bit better. So my time in the Reish Lakish, I'm a crash, Shalom Yibaneh, Kevin Shalom Yibaneh, Shavlo Yibaneh. So the Pasuk says, Shalom Yibaneh. And once you didn't build, that's it. Shavlo Yibaneh, you can't build anymore. So, Ihu, who dekai below Yibaneh. And Reish Lakish's argument is, okay, the one who didn't build, meaning Mr. Chalitza, he's the one who's going to be converted into this Pasuk. Aval Achiv kedekai mepchaimah. But as far as all the other brothers are concerned, so their status quo. And as far as from the woman's side, the one who received the chalitza, she's the one who wasn't built. Therefore, she gets a status change of a lav. But all the other co-wives who didn't receive chalitza, they remain at the status quo of kares. This is all an explanation of Rabbi Yochanan. And Rabbi Yochanan, so Rav Yochanan makes what I would call a first argument. And the first argument of Rav Yochanan is, it cannot possibly be. Because let's put ourselves in the position before Chalitza. Right? The moment before Chalitza, granted we're going to identify one brother who's going to do either Yibam or Chalitza to one of the wives. That's true. And there is a pecking order, and we'll talk about the pecking order later on in the Masechta, in terms of who gets first dips. And that's true as well. But when all is said and done, any one of the brothers could be a candidate to do Yibam or Chalitza to any one of the wives. And so Rav Yochanan says, I cannot possibly imagine that we're going to go from a position of he could do Yibam with her, or he could do Yibam with her, or he could do Chalitza with her, and then there was all these possibilities, and how are we going to end up? Only for the two principal parties, you get downgraded to a lav. And for everyone else, it climbs back up to a kares? Rav Yochanan says, I can't imagine that. I would call that argument number one.
Why not? Because if you have no situation of Yibam, like say, three brothers, and then there is one girl to get married to,
Look, when all said and done, it's an argument, and like any argument, you can argue with the argument. I understand that. But in the argument, though, I do hear it in the sense of, if, let's go way down the line. Let's say there's a brother called Yisachar. Okay? Number six. Or seven? Six. All right? Number six. So let's say you have Yisachar. He's number six. In other words, he was at one point in time able to marry that woman. And now it didn't happen, Yehuda or Levi or whoever did it. And now you're going to tell me that he had a chance to marry her And now the prohibition goes to a kares? I mean,
it's not any other situation. If you have one and two brothers,
okay,
one of them married,
good.
The other two are going to be,
I'm just telling you, good. And that's one argument of Rav Yochanan. And a second argument of Rav Yochanan is, and it could be, by the way, that you don't have to, you can ignore my one and two. Meaning it could be that this is all one blended argument. Okay, I'm not bent on that. V'hashakai ala b'kares, ela iyu shlichusa de'achim kavid, en ihi shlichusa de'tsara ka'avda. And then, Michael, you said it beautifully. And then the Gemara says that, and look at it this way, he's serving, okay. Okay, he is he's serving as the brother's agent in terms of giving the chalitza, and she is serving as all the other co-wives' agent in terms of the receiving of the chalitza. And so therefore, if we're going to speak now in terms of shlichus, so great. So one brother is going to actually do the chalitza, but he's doing it on behalf of, on proxy, for all the other brothers.
So his agency stops after he does the chalitza, and if he marries her, he's not
right. The use of the term shlichus over here, and the use of the term agency, I'm not going to use it in the classic sense. Because when all is said and done, there's only going to be one marriage with two people. And so, correct. The use of the shlichus and the agency over here is just in terms of the status that's afforded to all the brothers.
Does that count for the unborn brother yet?
Not yet. So the Gemara says, okay, good. And that's the argument of Rav Yochanan. If I can, just for a moment, let's conceptualize for just a quick second in terms of what is really fundamentally different between Reish Lakish and Rav Yochanan. Meaning, practically, we understand. For Reish Lakish's perspective, when Chalitza is done, there's only two people that are going to be affected by the Chalitza in terms of status, only the two principal parties. According to Rav Yochanan, they're all going to be affected. What's just conceptually, what's the difference between them? So perhaps, again, a suggestion, just in terms of how to think about this, how to view this. Meaning when the husband died, when the original husband died, so now there is almost as if a responsibility from all the surviving brothers to rebuild the family. Right? What usually and that bonds them to the widow or widows. Again, it could be one, it could be multiple. So there is that responsibility. What Rav Yochanan, the way Rav Yochanan, again, I'm just giving a way of conceptualizing. The way Rav Yochanan understands it is that is a shared responsibility on behalf of all the brothers. All the brothers have, to a certain degree, I'm going to say an equal, even though, again, there is a pecking order, but an equal responsibility to rebuild, to continue the legacy of the dead brother. And as from the co-wife standpoint as well. Meaning, they all have that responsibility of perpetuating the legacy of the dead brother, or in their case, the dead husband. So it's like, if you will, it's almost like a shared responsibility on behalf of everybody. So granted, you're only going to end up having two people involved, but really that responsibility was for everybody. And so therefore, when the two people do it, they're really doing it on behalf of everyone, meaning it's almost like for lack of a better term, it's a family project. Strange, but I'm just saying, it's just a... Right. Right, okay. So, and that could be what's behind the position of Rav Yochanan. Okay. The Gemara says, and by the way, Hedy, this one's easy. The halacha over here follows like Rav Yochanan. So the... Rav Yochanan, Reish Lakish. So here we go now. So Rav Yochanan is going to ask the following question to Reish Lakish. Now remember, Reish Lakish says that only the two principal parties' status change after the chalitza. If you do chalitza to your yavama, and then you're mekadesh her, meaning you marry her, and then he dies. Tzricha chalitza mina achim. So she's going to require chalitza from the brothers. Now, bishlam alididi. So Rav Yochanan says, from my standpoint, perfect. The brisa literally is perfect. Because I feel that all the brothers are chay velamin. And that's why there's a chalitza that's required. Because remember, the only thing prohibiting her now to the brothers is only a lav. Now, if it's only a lav prohibiting her, that means then that the yibum chalitza requirement obligation is going to trump the lav. Now, again, if there's a lav, you're always going to do chalitza. You're not going to do yibum.
Like, this is like, you know, after the
perfect. Ela l'dicha ma'itzricha chalitza. But according to you, why is chalitza required? Because remember, according to you, Reish Lakish, this brisa makes no sense, because you're of the opinion that all the surviving brothers, outside of the one who did the chalitza, is a kares relationship to her. And if they're a kares relationship to her, there's no mitzvah of yibum, there's no mitzvah of chalitza, there's nothing. So ulatamech emaseifa. So the Gemara says, okay. This is now Reish Lakish rebutting Rav Yochanan. Let's read on in the Braisa. Amarecha menachem v'kitcha ein la alav klum. If one of the brothers does kiddushin to her, that is nothing. The kiddushin is just totally a non-effective kiddushin. It didn't do anything. So ichai v'lav enenu amayin la alav klum. So now Reish Lakish looks at Rav Yochanan and says, how did you understand the second part of the Braisa? I understood it perfectly. Because the second part of the brisa says that there's no kedushin, because it's an ister kares, and there's no tfisas kedushin. But you, Rav Yochanan, what are you going to do with that? So I'm Sheshes Seif Asal and Rabbi Kiva. So Rav Sheshes will say in defense of Rav Yochanan, oh, the second half of the brisa is going like Rabbi Kiva Damer, ain't kedushin tosim b'chayv alavin. Okay, v'lisne l'diver Rabbi Kiva ain't lo alav klom. The Gemara has just a very simple question and really an unanswerable one. So if the second half of the Braisa is transitioning to the opinion of Rabbi Akiva, why did the second half of the Braisa just simply say that? Because that's an important point, which is not just simply to be left out. Right? Iker Chasam and Asefer. That second half of the Braisa is going like Rabbi Akiva, Kasha, the Gemara admits, the Gemara concedes, yet that's difficult. I don't know how to answer that question. Okay. Rav Ashi, Savalek Reish Lakish, Umetaris Lakir Rabbi Shimon. Interesting. This machlok is between Rav Yochanan and Reish Lakish in terms of the status change of the other brothers and the status change of the other wives becomes now even a later machlok is between Ravina and Rav Ashi, where Ravina takes the position of Rav Ashi takes the position of Reish Lakish and Ravina takes the position of Rav Yochanan. Umetaris Karabanan. Now, I did skip those words of Karebi Shimon and Karabanan. I didn't skip it. The Gemara is about to explain. So I'm just going to read out in the Gemara. We're on Yud Aleph Amud Aleph, we're three lines down. Rav Ashi, Savala, Kareish Lakish, Matas, Karebi Shimon, Hacholos Levinto, Vechaz Vekitcha, a person does Chalitza to his Yavama. And then afterwards, he's Mekadisha. And again, the Kedushin is Tofis because she to him is only a Lav, according to everyone. Tzricha Chalitza Mina Achim. She's going to need chalitza from the brothers. Now, again, remember, the brothers, according to Reish Lakish, the chayv kares. So, man achin, achin hayiludin. So we're not talking about the brothers who currently are alive. The brothers who are currently alive have no mitzvah whatsoever. They are an ister kares to this woman. We're talking about the brothers who will be born in the future. In other words, we're talking about future brothers. Now, if we're talking about future brothers, the question on the table is really simple. Future brothers are also exempt from the mitzvah of Yibum. Yes and no. Meaning, yes, they're exempt from the mitzvah of Yibum, according to our Mishnah, and according to the Chachamim, but Rabbi Shimon disagrees. And it could be that the author of the Brice is Rabbi Shimon, and Rabbi Shimon does... Right. In other words, in order to entertain Rabbi Shimon's position, the brothers have to be born after the chalitza, or in this case, after the yibum was done. Okay. So, come on, Rabbi Shimon. Amar echad min anolad mikadosh ein la alav klum. Now, if one of the brothers who were already born, i.e., they lived in the same world with Reuven, if they try to do kedushin to this woman, it won't work. Why not? Because there's kares and there's no tefisas kedushin. Come on, Reish Lakish. Good. So that's one way to explain the Braisa in accordance to Reish Lakish, and Rav Ashi, in fact, does. Ravina sevel like Rav Yochanan. Ravina understands the Braisa become like Rav Yochanan. Umetarsa liba de Rabbanan. And he understands the Braisa like the Chachamim. Let's see it inside. Hacholos levinto v'chaz v'kitcha. A man does yibum. Sorry. Does chalitza to his sister-in-law. And afterwards he's mekasher. Tzricha chalitza mena achin. requires chalitza from the brothers. Man achin, achin hanoladin. We're talking about the brothers who already were born. Meaning, because again, according to Rav Yochanan, everybody in the gets downgraded to alav. The surviving brothers and the co-wives as well. All get downgraded to alav after chalitza is done. And since they all get downgraded to alav, so now there is only a lav preventing yibum from occurring. So therefore, the other brothers have to do chalitza. Kaman k'Rav Yochanan. Amarecha min hayiludim v'katsha. Now, what if, let's say, you have a brother who didn't live in this world together with Reuven, i.e., he was born after Reuven died. This is what's called achiv shalaya balamo. This is case number 14 of our Mishnah. Ein la alav klom. Well, there's no mitzvah of yibum. And we know, if there's no mitzvah of yibum, what does that mean? It means that there's no sakaris. So his attempt to be mekadesh this woman is going to be totally pointless. Come on, Karabana, and that's going like the Chachamim. Okay, Itmar. Haval yivimta uva echa min ha'achem al tzarasa. A person has relations with his yivama, and one of the brothers then has relations with the co-wife. Okay, should sound familiar. It's pretty much what we've been discussing. Meaning, after the mitzvah is done between the two principal parties, question on the table is, what happens to the status of all the remaining brothers and all the remaining co-wives? So one says it's an Isser Karis, and the other one says it's an Isser Asay. Isser Karis, meaning that's whose position? Reish Lakish. Reish Lakish says that the relationship between anyone other than principal parties are back to the original Karis prohibition. And so therefore, if another brother tries to have relations with any of the other women, any of the other widows, that's an Isser Karis. And the other position is Asay. It's an Isser Asay, meaning you're not violating a Karis prohibition, but you are violating an Asay. Mandamar Bekaris Karesh Lakash, Mandamar Be'asay Karev Yochanan. And then the Gemara just simply spells it out, exactly as we just described, according to the Karis position that's holding like Resh Lakish, meaning all the surviving brothers and widows, other than the two principal parties, are Karis related to each other. And according to Rav Yochanan, they're not Karis related. The Yibam and Chalitza that's done, the Yibam or Chalitza that's done, is done on behalf of all the brothers and all the widows, and so therefore they all go through a status change, downgraded from a Karis down to a Lav. Yeah. Okay, last topic for today. And that is the co-wife of a sota. Okay. Sota comes in one of two forms. Just a quick introduction. I said this before, but it bears repeating. Sota one comes in one of two forms. The sota, as we usually think of it, is the way the Torah describes a sota, and that is, her husband warned her not to go into a room together with a man. He specified the man. She goes into a room together with the man. Adam did not see exactly what happens in the room, but she's miyachit. She secludes herself with that man in the room. She's now what's called a sota. But let's give it now a more legal definition. She really is a suffix sota, meaning we do not know what happened in that room. We could speculate, we could wonder, but we do not know what happened in that room. And generally speaking, in terms of giving any type of status change, you got to know what happened. She is merely a suffix sota. In this particular case, the Torah says, I understand that we don't know what happened in that room, but she now has a status. We're going to call her from this point going forward a sota. Even though we don't know what happened in the room, again, all this needs the proper due process with the warning, etc., etc. Okay, Masechta Sota, we'll see it all inside. Good. And her resolution is going to be, go to the Beis HaMikdash and drink the Mei Sota. Fine. And I gave you the really short version of the story. And then there's a Sota in the more literal translation, which means that she committed adultery. Period. No speculation. We know. There were witnesses. She admitted it. We know she committed adultery. Huh? Well, she wouldn't be killed for a very simple reason. In order to be killed, you have to go through a lot of due process. Witnesses. Witnesses. No, you can have two witnesses singing. She's still not going to be put to death. You need a warning. She needs to accept the warning. She needs to do the act immediately after receiving the warning. There's a whole litany of things that need to happen in order for her to actually be put to death. Because again, Beis Din will only kill only with due process. We get to Sanhedrin, you'll see. It's
not a due process, then she's not adulterous.
No, she is. She committed adultery.
It's once in 70 years.
The capital crime punishment is don't confuse the fact that she's an adulteress to the fact that we're not killing her. In other words, she's an adulteress, but in order for Beis Din to execute punishment, they need every I dotted and every T crossed, and it's a process. But that doesn't change the fact that she committed adultery. She did. In other words, we know she did. So that is what's called a sota. Okay, when a woman is a sota, so if she's not being put to death, because Beis Din does not have enough evidence and process in order to put to death, so what happens to this woman? So she is... So she is prohibited to her husband. She's also prohibited to the man that she had the affair with. Asa labal. That's a sota. Okay. Now, the Gemara over here is going to be discussing the following. We touched on this issue earlier in the Masechta, but here the Gemara deals with it straight out. Amar Rabbi Amar Rav, Sara Sota Asura, Tumaksiva. The co-wife of a sota is prohibited because when the Torah uses a term to describe the sota, the Torah uses the word tuma. Ki arayos. And she has the status of an erva. Okay. Well, the Gemara earlier wanted to know how come this case didn't make it into the Mishnah. Okay, so all the way back on Daf Gimel. So Meisav Rav Chisda Rabbi Shimon Omer Biyaso Chalitza Sama Achav Shel Rishon Poter Tzarasa. Now, the Rav Chisda, I'm sorry, Rabbi Shimon says that the Bia or the Chalitza of May Achav Shel Rishon Poter Tzarasa will excuse the co-wife. Okay, what is this a reference to? So Rashi points out, this is coming up later on the Masechta. The end of the Masechta is going to be so interesting when we get to the end of Yevamos, because we're going to be talking about a number of Aguna scenarios in the end of Yevamos, and we're going to be talking about a number of things that were done to be Mater Aguna to release the woman from her chained state. Okay, we'll stay tuned just a short 3 months from today. We're going to, more than 3 months. About 3 months from today. So we're going to be discussing the Aguna. So the Mishnah over there says that if, God forbid, but it can happen, her husband who she thought was dead is not, evidenced by the fact that he's coming back here, and she is with her new husband, so she is given somewhat of a status of a sota. Now, I understand that she didn't do any of this intentionally or deliberately. She thought that her husband was dead, but
she testified herself as the only person.
We're gonna discuss in much greater detail. For now, let's just leave it like this. So, okay. So, Amalacha Rav Aminalacha Anisota Daraisavata Martli Sota Darabana. So the Gemara says, it's funny. What a comparison. Oh, by the way, I didn't articulate the question. And in that scenario, what happens? The Mishnah later on says, we're talking chalitza, we're talking co-wives, meaning we're talking yibam and chalitza. And meanwhile, we establish the fact that isota is, in terms of yibam, considered an erva. So how could you say that on one hand, and meanwhile later on, we're going to be having a discussion about this woman who is quasi-sota, and she is going to be, and we're talking chalitza, we're talking yibum, what's going on? The Gemara says very simple. I'll tell you what's going on. Amalecha Rav, Aminalecha Ana Sota Daraisa, V'atam Artli Sota Darabanan. I'll tell you what's going on. We're having a Daraisa conversation. We're talking about Sota Min HaTorah. And meanwhile, over there, in the end of the Masechta, the Chachamim treat her like a Sota, meaning give her the status of a Sota, but that's a rabbinic injunction. And when we get to the Masechta at the end, we'll understand much better why the Chachamim did that. But they did that. But that's legislation done by the Chachamim. So how can you compare a Torah law and a Din D'Rabbanan? A Torah law can uproot Yibam and Chalitza, but a Din D'Rabbanan can't. So Udikari law, my Kari law. And the Gemara says, and you know what, this answer was so obvious, to be honest with you. Like, the person who proposed this question, what was he thinking? So the Gemara says, I'll tell you, what he was thinking that the Chachamim usually model their rabbinic legislation after Dine D'Oraisa, and so therefore I might have thought that the two pattern after one another, but the Gemara's answer obviously is that they don't. In this regard. A woman who secludes herself with the man she was warned not to seclude herself with. For the amount of time where an act of relations could take place. She is prohibited to her house. She is prohibited from eating truma. If she's an Ashes Kohen. And v'im meis, choleses v'lo meisei abemis. And upon death, chalitza but not yibam. So amal charav, amin alachana sota vadav, amart liat sota safek. And again, the Gemara says, again, what are you doing? We are talking about a sota vadai, meaning a woman who we know committed adultery. The witnesses saw, she admitted it. The man, however, we know. That's what's called a sota vadai. And you're talking about a sota safek, that's different. So the Gemara says, yeah, but I understand the difference. There are two different types of sota, but halachically speaking, what's the difference? Let's pause over here. We are now beyond our allotted time. We will stop over here tomorrow. Not tomorrow. Shmini Atzeres. We'll pick it up from the top of Yud Aleph Amud Beis. Shmini Atzeres Daf is Daf Yud Beis. So we're in a much better position to make our way back. In the schedule, we'll say exactly what time the Daf is. But obviously, I'll look for a time that Shavu L'chol Nefesh. Okay, we'll stop over here and we'll pick it up on Shmini Atzeres. Everyone, a good Moed and a good Gebenshir.